War Room, Impeachment with Stephen K. Bannon, Jason Miller, and Raheem Kassam. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Welcome to War Room Impeachment. This is episode 88. We're from Capitol Hill, from the War Room today. It's Christmas Day, December 25th, the year of our Lord, 2019, Wednesday, the 25th of December. Stephen K. Bannon, Raheem, and Jason have the episode and the day off. We're on the John Frederick Radio Network, the Salem Broadcast Radio Network nationwide, on americasvoice.news, a streaming platform in the United States and throughout the world, and of course, Newsmax TV. Now, every year I've been doing radio, doing media. On Christmas Day, we try to do something different. It's always the, in my previous jobs at KBC and Sirius XM, always the most popular show I did every day was the Christmas Day show. And that is because we talk about the combat history of the United States and those Americans that had to sacrifice during the Christmas season when everybody else was enjoying home. And I've always had on here, I think, the finest combat historian of his generation, a close friend, a guy that we've known for many, many years. And we've known him through one hit book after the other. It's Patrick K. O'Donnell. Patrick, thank you so much for coming to the War
Thanks
Room.
Thanks for having me on again, Steve. It's really great to be here. It's a pleasure.
So what I want to do is start, like we always do, and we're going to go through the kind of combat history of the United States and a couple of major engagements on Christmas Day, and talk about then how you develop them in your book and how you talk about it. The first one I want to do, to go to the Revolutionary War and talk about Trenton and the Battle of Trenton. And one thing I want to hold up here so we can, everybody on Newsmax and America's Voice, this book, if you have not gotten it, Washington's Immortals, is one of the finest history books. I'm a history nut. I try to read everything I get my hands on. And you've got so many great books we're going to talk about. But man, if you want to learn about the Revolutionary War, and you do it, this is a regiment, right?
It's the Marylanders.
The Marylanders. Why don't you give a
Washington's
background?
Immortals. And this is one of the most elite regiments that Washington had in the Revolutionary War. It was his shock troops. In the picture on the book kind of is their first major action.
And where was that?
This is in the Battle of Brooklyn. And this is an American Thermopylae.
Yeah,
this is where the United States is saved by this Maryland regiment. It's called the Maryland 400, and they charge multiple times into...
Well, set the battle up. How do they get to Brooklyn? How is Washington getting smoked? And why are the Immortals so important?
The Battle of Brooklyn is one of the largest battles of the Revolution up to this point. And the British invade Long Island or Brooklyn, and it's setting up a
massive armada, and it's to drive the American, the Continental Army.
This is the largest armada ever assembled in North America for a large. It's 2/3 of the British Navy are there to invade us, and they bring 2/3 of their army along with many Hessian allies.
And I guess Boston hadn't gone so well for them, so they thought it was time to teach the rebels a lesson, right?
Exactly, and they come in with both barrels loaded and ready to go, and they land at Long Island, and Washington divides his army, unfortunately, and has about 10,000 troops in Brooklyn.
Is that unfortunate? It was a strategic move by him, but he got criticized for this later, correct?
It was a bad move, and because he divides his army, and he knows that it's very, very difficult to defend New York City, because the sea is everywhere. The British Navy can land anywhere it wants, basically, and it's very hard to defend. So he divides his army, puts about half his troops in Brooklyn and the other half in Manhattan. British land in August 1776 in Long Island, and they start to attack the American defenses, which are spread out. Most of them are concentrated in Brooklyn Heights, and then there's some that are spread out on the spur of Gowanus Heights, which is now Greenwood Cemetery. And that's where the Immortals are first positioned. The battle begins.
And they're a voluntary Maryland regiment.
These are men of honor, family, and fortune. They are some of the wealthiest members of Maryland society that form their own, initially a company, and then it blossoms into a regiment of roughly 700 or 800 men, and they're positioned in Long Island. And that morning, it's August 27th, and the British attack. And it's interesting. The battle actually begins in a watermelon patch where British scouts are trying to find some water. They want the watermelon. They run into American pickets, And then they stop, but that's just the small start of the battle. And the British have a flanking maneuver, which basically outflanks the entire American defenses. And they go around, they go through an unguarded pass. And the Marylanders are holding the line at Greenwood Cemetery and then suddenly realize that they are outflanked and they have to make their way back towards Brooklyn Heights. And it's there that they make an epic stand. It's really an American Thermopylae. They sacrifice themselves.
They're the 400.
They're the 400. They sacrifice themselves so the rest of the army, which is on the Heights of Gowanus, can escape back to the defenses.
They held long enough so that you could actually have time to do a strategic retreat.
As one historian said, it was is an hour more precious in our history than any other. And their epic stand of three or four bayonet charges allowed most of the American troops to escape back to our defenses. But that was really not very safe. Now the entire British army is surrounding practically our 10,000 men, and the East River is behind them. And if the British Navy can get up the East River and outflank us from that position, they can completely cut us off. And Washington has a decision to make. Does he stand and fight, or does he retreat? And this is the epic American Dunkirk. This is where he decides to retreat. And
because the purpose was to keep the army intact. An army in being would be something that the British, remember, July 1776, it just happened. This is in the fall. You know, people think the Declaration of Independence, hey, that was the beginning. All the bad stuff came afterwards, right? This is 90 days, 120 days after our Declaration of Independence, and we're getting smoked.
The Declaration of Independence was signed in their blood, in their sacrifice. And it's here that they decide to evacuate. And this, let me tell you, this is a situation where the war could have been completely lost. 10,000 troops completely surrounded. Washington was there. They then crossed the East River. It's John Glover and his Marblehead men are able to take everybody back by boats. And there's an amazing thing that happens. A fog sets in at exactly the right time and screens the movement of the army as it's
miraculous.
Going across.
Providential.
And it's really one of the great evacuations in military history. But it sets up these guys, Washington's Immortals, is really one of Washington's elite units, shock troops, if you will. And they then fight again. The British land 2 weeks later at Kipps Bay and attack, and it's a disaster. The army melts away. Washington is literally, you know, rides out to sort of rally his troops. And there's a great quote. He's literally catatonic as there's three or four hundred yards away, the entire British army is barreling down on him. Somebody has to actually pull the reins on his horse out of there to pull back. And Glover's men and the Marylanders also are there as a rear guard to sort of allow the rest of the army to pull back.
After defeat, we got a couple of minutes in this segment. Defeat after defeat, how does he get to Christmas and to Trenton into this what is considered a masterstroke?
These are some of the darkest days in the American Revolution. The political will of the country is collapsing. There are people that are signing up for General Howe's amnesty declarations in New Jersey. The whole state is basically capitulated to the British.
And it's logical that we announce our independence and then we can't fight. I mean, we really can't stand up to the British Army or Navy. We can fight,
kernel of resilience.
Yes. Yeah, exactly,
there.
Exactly. And if you're one of the one third in the middle, or the Tories, you know, you had, remember, one third were patriots, one third in the middle, one third were Tories. The two thirds are sitting there going, these rebels talk well and they fight and they're tenacious, but this is the British Army and the Royal Navy. This is the greatest empire on earth.
It's an empire that had collapsed all other rebellions prior to that too. But these men and their fortitude of the small group of Americans band together to have one of the greatest counterattacks in military history.
So they get down. We got about a minute left in this segment. They get down. How did they actually get to Trenton? They retreat all the way down there?
They retreat to the safety, the perceived safety of the Delaware River, where the farms are aligned with the Patriot cause in Pennsylvania. And then it's Christmas Day that, you know, Washington decides to the masterstroke and attack across the river.
Okay, we're going to hold this. We're going to have Christmas Day, and I've done this for many, many years. This is War Room Impeachment. There's a very special broadcast. It's episode 88. We're at the live on Capitol Hill. We're on Capitol Hill. I've got Patrick K. O'Donnell, the finest combat historian of his generation. The book is Washington's Immortals. He's talking to us about the Christmas experience of our combat troops. We're going to talk about the Battle of the Bulge. We're going to talk about Chosin Reservoir. We got many of the most famous battles in American history. We're very honored. We do this every year to honor the memory of those men and women that that gave all in these conflicts, and to particularly remind people on Christmas that we've actually had to fight and show our resilience. Stephen K. Bannon, Episode 88, War Room Impeachment. We'll return with Patrick K. O'Donnell in a second.
Bannon, Miller, Kassam. War Room Impeachment
on the John Fredericks Radio Network.
Welcome back. War Room Impeachment, Episode 88. It is Christmas Day, Wednesday, the 25th of December, the year of our Lord, 2019. John Fredericks Radio Network, Salem Broadcasting Radio Network throughout the country, americasvoice.news and Newsmax TV on cable. Honored to be joined by Patrick K. O'Donnell, I believe the leading combat historian of his generation. I've done this show every year for the last couple of years, where we take time out on Christmas Day to remember the heroes of America who had to fight on Christmas Day. The book is Washington's Immortals. Patrick's got a whole slew of best-selling combat histories that we're going to talk about. But we're talking about the Revolutionary War. We always start with the Revolution. We always start with the Immortals. And now we've been retreating, and we're ending up in Trenton.
We're ending up in Trenton, and it's the end of the rope, as Washington says to Lund Washington, and he feels that this is his last chance. The enlistments are expiring for the entire army. There's only a small number of days left, a window left to change the
tide.
We're
just in December. This is the first Christmas of this is America's first Christmas.
America's first
Christmas. This is America's first Christmas. We have the Declaration of Independence in July of 1776. The British realize this is going to be a big deal. They send the Armada. They send, you know, the 2/3 of the Royal Navy, which is the most powerful navy in the world, the British Army. They run us out of Long Island. More importantly, they run us out of New York, which is essentially Philadelphia is, but this is technically the business capital of America. And they're driving us across New Jersey because they want to destroy this army in being. They know if they can destroy this army, they can put down this revolt.
They are trying to destroy the army and destroy our will, too. And the will of the American people is fading at this point. And our weariness for the war is great. And Washington knows that he needs to have a great victory to have a counterattack, basically. And that's where Trenton comes into play. The Hessians and the British had aligned their forces in New Jersey in a series of outposts in cities that they had defended.
And they had Hessians there because they needed the manpower.
They were mercenaries.
They were on the payroll. So they're going to be in a foreign country. Let's pay some guys to fight with us.
And they were excellent soldiers. And they brought these guys in. And the Hessian garrison there was some of the finest troops in the Hessian armed forces, but also in the British Army. It was garrisoned by a guy by the name of Johann Rahl, who was a hero of White Plains, New York. He led the breakthrough there, and he also led the breakthrough at Fort Washington, where they captured 2,900 American troops. And Johann Rahl led the breakthrough. So this was one of their finest commanders, and he was constantly under attack. The outpost at Trenton was being raided left and right every day. Their forces were on their toes. Literally, these guys were sleeping in their uniforms and with their muskets on their side because they were constantly being hit by the Americans through raids. And it was that Christmas Day that Rahl has intelligence that they might be hit. And a series of incredible events take place that he literally thinks that a small raid that took place earlier in the day was the full American army, but it wasn't. It's Washington that concentrates his forces at Christmas Day, and it's a three-pronged attack. There are three prongs that try to cross the Delaware River, which is ice-choked at the time, and it's a nor'easter. But only one of those prongs, the main army, gets through. The other two fail. With Washington and his forces of about 2,600 men cross the river, miraculously, they're able to get through these ice floes and chunks in the river. They cross the river, and they attack Trenton from the top. and they're running out of time because they're trying to do it before daylight sets in, that they get to Trenton, and they're rushing down, you know, several winding roads and through a series of crevasses and ravines. It's really quite treacherous, but they make it to Trenton, and they surprise Johann Rahl's troops. And it's a situation where Glover's men that actually rode them across actually cuts off the main retreat for the Hessian troops at a place called Assanpink Creek. They set up some guns there. They stop them. The Americans also bring in a lot of artillery with Henry Knox, and they're able to envelop the Hessian garrison.
Henry Knox would be the famous artillery commander of Washington's army.
This rotund, jovial, just American patriot that's incredible. And his artillery is
He can lay down some fire.
It's always literally they move so quickly. The artillery is able to move very quickly and able to surround the Hessians. And interestingly enough, the trip across the river back to Pennsylvania is even more treacherous than the trip.
Why was that?
Because they found the rum supply. And Washington
forbid the
rum supply from being, you know, confiscated by the soldiers, and they started drinking, and it was a drunken cruise on the way back, and several men literally fell overboard and froze to death.
Let me ask you, go back for a second to set up Trenton. Washington as combat commander and Washington as strategist, was this a bold and daring plan at Trenton that was unusual in military annals about dividing your force and how you hit? Was it unique, and he was doing it because he knew he had to risk all?
That's exactly right. I mean, it was a very daring plan. It was complicated. He made it overly complicated. He had three prongs instead of just one. Those other two failed, but the main force succeeded. And it's a unique situation in the American Revolution where there's a full envelopment, where it's not just an American victory. It's a decisive American victory. But it also sets up two other victories that most people don't realize. The victory at a place called Assanpink Creek, which is where Glover's men actually cut off the main Hessian retreat down the road across Assanpink Creek, and then later at Princeton. And the story of Assanpink Creek is an incredible one. It's an epic stand at a bridge. It's one of my favorite stories of the Revolution. Mm-hmm. Several days later, they cross back over to Trenton, and instead of trying to defend the city itself, Washington wisely sets up behind the high ground on Assanpink Creek and tries to defend the bridge. The British bring their everything they've got with Cornwallis. Their light infantry, their elite troops attack the bridge around 4 o'clock. They storm it several times and they stop. It's Washington's horse is literally on the rail of the bridge. He's leading his men from that far up front, and they hold.
Tell me, this is America's first Christmas. How big was this feeling of having a victory on our first Christmas?
It was tremendous. It was a worldwide thing. It went viral. Several kings in Europe were like, this is the greatest man in the world, one of the greatest strategic victories in history. It was tremendous.
Because the up until then, outside of Boston, but since they had landed in Long Island, it had been defeat after defeat after defeat after defeat. Our guest is Patrick K. O'Donnell. He's the author of so many books. We're going to have it up on the website. The website is warroom.org. It's very appropriate that we've got Patrick K. O'Donnell. He is the, I think, finest combat historian of his generation. We're going to talk about all his books today. Washington is Immortals. If you want to learn about the Revolution, this is the elite unit of Marylanders that fought so courageously. We're discussing the time at right now at the Battle of Trenton. We're going to come back. When we return, we're going to go to World War II. We're going to go to the Battle of the Bulge and talk about the fighting during the Christmas and winter season there that is legendary with the 101st and other people. Patrick K. O'Donnell is our guest. This is War Room Impeachment, Episode 88. We're going to return with Patrick K. O'Donnell in just a moment.
Bannon, Miller, Kassam. War Room, Impeachment.
On the John Fredericks Radio Network.
Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas Day. It's the 25th of December, the year of our Lord, 2019, episode 88. And we're on all of our platforms today. And you can go to warroom.org. Honored to be joined on Christmas Day by Patrick K. O'Donnell, combat historian, author of many, many great books. We're now talking about, every year I do this, we talk about the heroism of our men and women in uniform on Christmas Day throughout American history. We just did America's first Christmas at Trenton. And now we're going to jump up to World War II, the famous Battle of the Bulge that took place between 16 December 1944 and 16 January 1945, over about a 30-day period over Christmas holiday. The book is Beyond Valor, World War II's Ranger and Airborne Veterans, reveal the heart of combat. Patrick K. O'Donnell is the author. You can get the book on Amazon. It's a must-read. It's an oral history of the 18th Airborne Corps, and that's made up of the famous 82nd Airborne and the 101st Airborne, and with the 17th Airborne Division.
Right.
And my daughter was a member after West Point of the 101st Airborne, so I've always loved this story. Battle of the Bulge. People think they know everything about it, but tell us what it was like over the Christmas holidays, how brutal the winter was. People, Valley Forge and the Bulge and Chosin are the three big ones when it comes to cold, fighting in cold.
This is the coldest winter in European history in 100 years that occurs in the Battle of the Bulge. And this is where Hitler tries to reverse the tide of war and sends about 500,000 troops.
Wow.
And, you know, hundreds of his best tanks against a weak point in
this
the
This is a
line.
Counterstroke to slow down the advance of the Allied army so that they can buy time with the Allies and really hold off the Russians.
He's hoping to sort of split the Western Allies, the British and the Americans. And also, what most people don't realize is that there was a coup attempt against Hitler in the summer. He's also trying to unite his forces in Germany and politically unite any disparate forces with this offensive who's out there that's true to him.
Right, and a victory would help that.
Indeed. And he stakes everything on the Bulge. He strips away the Eastern Front of some of its best units, the SS, and puts them against the Americans, which are in kind of a rear echelon position, a quiet front, so to speak, in the Ardennes Forest. And this is where Hitler strikes on the morning of December 16th. And, you know, some of his finest units roll out and surprise American forces there. And they had...
How did Intel miss this?
There were some in Intel that did see it. But it's like so many other things. The dots weren't connected, or the information didn't get to the right place, or it was stovepiped. For instance, I wrote a book called Dog Company, which was on the Rangers at the Hurricane Forest. And their Hill 400, literally overlooked the assembly area of the Bulge. And they were able to relay some of that information, but the information didn't get to the right place. So they had to rush the only reserve that we had, which is the 18th Airborne Corps, 82nd Airborne Division, 101st and the 17th Airborne Division, into the Bulge. They trucked these guys in as fast as they could.
They didn't do an airdrop. These guys came in as basically light infantry.
They came in as light infantry, and they were elite infantry, and they held the line in critical places. We all know the story about Bastogne, which is the story about Nuts, and the American commander saying, you know, after the Germans said, "You want to surrender?" He responded, "Nuts." The 82nd, on the other hand, were further up north, defending against some of the best divisions in the German army, the Waffen-SS, and they held there. As the 17th were down at the 101st
just,
down by
just
Bastogne.
For the audience, we've got about a minute left in this segment. How, when you say it's the coldest winter in 100 years, and we've heard about at the Bulge how cold it was, how cold was it? For our audience on Christmas Day, what was the intensity of the cold like?
In some cases, minus 20. And this
minus
is
just, 20 degrees.
And with wind chill especially. And these guys did not have cold weather equipment. Most of the time, their feet were, they had frozen feet and trench foot.
How bad were the casualties?
They had about 19,000 Americans that were killed at the Battle
at
of
Bastogne,
Bulge.
When the 101st, because my daughter's 326 Combat Engineering Group has one of the flags of the Nazis they took off the building when they held. How overrun were they when they held? What was the odds against them holding?
It was what happened is the Bulge itself, Hitler's offensive had failed, so he decided to focus all of his forces against Bastogne, but they held. And it was the 101st as well as other units that were in there that were holding. And then Patton's 4th Fourth Army, Third Army, I should say.
Made it up there. Patton was the hero. The Cavalry
fourth
finally.
Fourth Armor Division makes their way through.
The Cavalry finally arrived. Okay, we're going to jump for a short commercial break. So far, you've got cold, you've got Christmas, and you have American valor holding when it has to hold. When put into the breach, we've always held.
American resilience
and grit. Okay, Patrick K. O'Donnell is our combat historian. This is Stephen K. Bannon. You're a special edition, episode 88, our Christmas edition. We're talking about the valor, the heroism, the grit, determination of the American fighting man on Christmas Day throughout our history. We're going to return on War Room Impeachment. We're going to go to Korea and the Chosin Reservoir. Next on War Room Impeachment.
Bannon, Miller, Kassam. War Room Impeachment on the John Fredericks Radio Network.
Merry Christmas and welcome back to War Room Impeachment, the 25th of December, Wednesday. Special edition, episode 88. I do this every year when I'm doing radio. We dedicate Christmas Day or Christmas morning. I always do morning shows to not to talk about the news of the day, but to talk about something we think is much more important, and that's the heroism of the American fighting man and woman. We've got Patrick K. O'Donnell, who I believe is the finest combat historian of his generation, a number of books we're going to get to go through briefly at the end of the show. One of my favorites of his, Give Me Tomorrow, the Korean War's greatest untold story, the epic stand of the Marines of George Company. And this is at the Chosin Reservoir. This really was the hardest fighting we ever did. First off, before we get into it, how did you pick the title? It's such a grabbing title. Give Me Tomorrow. How'd you pick that?
The title is the same as the picture on this book. David Duncan was a very famous combat photographer for Life magazine. And he took a picture of the men of George Company 3-1 and asked them what would they like for Christmas. And the man said, give me tomorrow. And literally, that was when he took that picture of one of the men in the book.
Wow. Incredible.
And it was, it's not a sarcastic comment. It's literally those men barely survived. When I came back from Iraq, all the books I've ever written have always found me. And Give Me Tomorrow found me serendipitously when I came back from Iraq as a combat historian for Lima Company 3-1 in the Battle of Fallujah. And I came.
Which is the toughest battle of Fallujah. Second Fallujah was the toughest fight the Marines had. I made a film about this.
I was in Lima Company 3-1, and our squad had the most casualties of the entire battle. We had 5 killed out of the squad.
Door to door for a city of 250,000 people. Door to door. Every door had to be kicked in.
I pulled the main character of my book out who was killed in a firefight with Chechens. And I came home. Asked my parents not to come to Camp Pendleton, and I was alone from the war, but I was greeted by several old men in red and gold windbreakers, and they asked me who I was, and then they said, well, we were George Company 3-1. You carried our battle guide on in Fallujah, and we held a key hill against a Chinese regiment. At that point, I was like, wow, a small company of men, less than 200, held off a regiment of 2,000 Chinese soldiers. That's an incredible story. The next thing I know, they're like, you need to come to our reunion next year. And that's where I was immersed in their incredible story. These men, had a profound impact on the Chosin Reservoir. They had to fight through an entire division of Chinese troops, 10,000 troops, to go up a road, a 10-mile road called Hellfire Valley.
Hellfire Valley.
That was surrounded by a Chinese division. And half of that convoy was cut up, surrounded, and annihilated.
Real briefly, tell people in the audience, the Chosin Reservoir, why is it famous, what happened there, and how brutally difficult were the conditions?
This is a situation where we faced the Chinese in open war. The Chinese sent their field armies.
This is the Korean War.
This is the winter of 1950, and Mao Zedong sends hundreds of thousands of Chinese soldiers. He calls them volunteers. Across the Yalu River into North Korea. They surprise that this is an intelligence failure. It's also a situation where MacArthur literally decides to ignore the intelligence. A Chinese army coils around the 1st Marine Division. This Chinese army is 120,000 strong. 1st Marine Division is roughly 20,000 men. George Company, these guys are
6-1. You're outnumbered.
In George Company's case, it was largely 20-1.
20-1.
20-1 odds. Human wave assaults, no food. no water. All they had was snow for the most part.
And Tootsie
Roll Pops.
And how cold?
20 to 30 below zero. With the wind chill, it could be up to 40 below.
And they were not, and they did not have winter combat gear.
They had
gear.
The same combat gear as the guys in the Battle of the Bulge, and most of them had their feet frozen. The VA now, anybody that fought in the Chosen Reservoir, they're called the Frozen Chosen, automatic benefits. Because they know that they have frozen feet. But these guys broke into the Chosen Reservoir down this road. They were the critical reinforcements that were needed to hold the main hill in the overlooking an airfield that was being built. This was the critical hub where the entire division would reunite. The hill had to be held at all costs, and these guys do it.
How did George Company get picked for that duty?
It was serendipity. There weren't enough trucks to bring them up to Hagar Rhee at the time. So they were in a rear area, and then the situation calls for reinforcements immediately. They have to go in at all costs, and they have to break through in the road. And the main character of my book, a guy by the name of Rocco Zulu, is a master sergeant at Peleliu. He's leading the force, is literally shot.
He fought at Peleliu, and he fought
Silver Star
at
Peleliu, and he's leading the men, and he's shot across his chest multiple times. And he's right as they're going through the gates at Hagar Rhee, and he's thrown on a pile of bodies that's about 8 or 9 high and left to die because they all thought he was dead. Another unit found him. Every single man in that unit thought that man was dead. Another unit found him. They medevaced him out. 40 years later at their first reunion, he shows up.
And that's the first time they see each other.
That's the first time they see him. A ghost returns. That's the beginning of my book, Forgive
Incredible.
Me Tomorrow.
That's right. How do these veterans, Korean War is very different than World War II, right? How do they feel they've been treated in history? When you went to the reunion that kicked this thing off, how do they feel they've been treated in history?
These men are from the forgotten war. They don't. Most Americans don't understand or know their war, but many of these men were World War II veterans. All the NCOs, for instance, in George Company were hardened World War II veterans. But interestingly enough, many of the men, the privates themselves, were only reservists, but they had never been through boot camp. Many of these guys.
No, this was really when in Korea, they were thrown over there like a police action. I mean, not trained at all, and that's one of the criticisms later of how these young men.
But
just
they
got
rose
chopped
to
up.
The occasion.
Yep.
And they, I mean, their story is epic.
Okay, we're going to take a short break. My guest is Patrick K. O'Donnell. It's a special edition, episode 88, of War Room Impeachment. This is our Christmas Day special where we honor by telling the stories of men and women in combat. Over the Christmas season, the Christmas holiday. We're going to return, and when I wrap up, I'm going to do is have Patrick K. O'Donnell, who's such a fantastic combat historian, really briefly go through all his books. We're going to have them up on the website. We're going to have all this for you later in the day so that you can just click through and go. Make sure you go to warroom.org, one of the hottest sites on the internet right now. Greatly appreciate your sponsorship. Christmas Day, honoring America's heroes. This is episode 88. Stephen K. Bannon will return with Patrick K. O'Donnell in just a moment.
Bannon, Miller, Kassam. War Room, Impeachment.
On the John Fredericks Radio Network.
Merry Christmas. Welcome back. It's Wednesday, the 25th of December, year of our Lord, 2019. It's Christmas Day, episode 88, War Room, Impeachment. Stephen K. Bannon from Capitol Hill. We want to, we always honor our troops talking about the fighting over Christmas Day that, you know, sometimes people forget that throughout history, Americans, fighting men and women, have won some of our greatest victories over Christmas, over the Christmas holidays, and particularly Christmas Day. Patrick K. O'Donnell, close friend, fabulous writer. The reason these books are so special, he spends years in research, and they read like novels, but about real people. You really meet the characters. I want to go through, we've got 4 minutes left, just some of the books. We Were One, this is where you're in an in-bed in Iraq. Fallujah, if you haven't read the story of the Battle of Fallujah, and this is an eyewitness account, unbelievable. One of the toughest victories the Marines have ever had.
It's about 8 best friends, and only 3 come home. And I was house to house with
these guys. Rent.
Yeah.
Amazing
clearing houses.
We Were One, we're going to have it all up there on site. The Unknowns. What is this?
This is a combat history of World War I through the eyes of the most decorated soldiers of World War I. The men that Pershing selected to bring back the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier.
Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. Just incredible. The Unknowns, you cannot put this down.
It's a combat history of these guys, and it's the Navy, it's the Army, and the Marine Corps, and it's all the epic battles of World War One.
Washington Immortals is about this elite Maryland regiment.
The Marylanders that saved the United States, the Maryland 400. And it's a band of brothers on the Revolution. It's the first of its kind. It follows these men through 8 years of war.
Real quickly, Brooklyn, where the American Thermopylae was, we don't even know where it, do we know where it is right
we
now?
We don't know where their mass grave is. They're buried somewhere under a sidewalk or under an empty lot.
There's a something on a tavern over there.
There's a rusted old sign that said, "Here lie 256 Continental Soldiers, Maryland Heroes." Somewhere those men, the bodies of these men are. That's why I wrote the book, to honor them and to maybe
one day
bring them home.
It. Give me tomorrow about the Chosin Reservoir.
It's a band of brothers on George Company 3-1 in the Chosin Reservoir, but also their story from Inchong forward.
And Beyond Valor is about the Battle of the Bulge.
It's actually about all the airborne and Rangers for the European theater. I've interviewed over 5,000 World War II vets, and these are their stories.
You've interviewed 5,000 World War II vets?
From all theaters and, about 4,000 World War II vets, and then Korean War, and then others.
We are going to have Patrick's books up on the website. We're going to obviously break this down today and tell you about it. You have a website. How do people get to find out more
Patrick
about you?
PatrickKO'Donnell.com, and then Combat Historian is my Twitter, at Combat Historian.
You've got a couple of other – you're working now in research for years. Your next books are coming out in 2021 and then 2022, 23?
Yeah. I'm going back to the Revolution, and then I'm going to go to the Civil War.
Revolution, the Civil War. Patrick K. O'Donnell is the finest combat historian of his generation. His books, you cannot put them down. He tells a story of American valor, and he tells it through the individual stories that he does his intense research on. You're an American treasure, and we thank you so much for joining
us
today,
Steve.
On Christmas Day.
It's a pleasure to be here.
We do this every Christmas with Patrick K. O'Donnell. I haven't done it in a couple of years, but we did it for 3 or 4 years in a row. This is Stephen K. Bannon, War Room Impeachment. You can go to our site, warroom.org. It's one of the top internet sites around, news sites. Have a Merry Christmas. We will see you tomorrow with a special edition, episode 89 of War Room Impeachment.